You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
There's a new little boy in the neighborhood, and last night it started to snow. He brought out a sleigh and was all set to play, but the gang didn't say hello. So I made friends with the poor little tyke, and he said to me, "Do you know what I'd like? I'd like to hitch a ride with Santa Claus. Wouldn't that be something to see? I'd like to hitch a ride with Santa Claus, dodging the clouds, waving at crowds. I'd crack the whip and keep a watch for."
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I got an email right before the show tonight as I got into the studio. "Hi, James and Keith. Merry Christmas. I'm sending a card and a donation via snail mail. Was going to include a request for a Christmas song, but since this is your last broadcast before Christmas, could you play at least one of these songs by the Andrew Sisters? Bit of trivia, the Andrew Sisters, best known for the song Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy from Company B, are from Minneapolis, my hometown. Here's a delightful Christmas song by the Andrew Sisters called I'd Like to Hitch a Ride with Santa Claus. If you get this email before the show tonight, I'd be delighted to hear it. If not, maybe next week. God bless you, and peace and grace from our Lord and Savior, Jesus the Christ. Thinking and praying for you and your family as always." And that's signed from a listener in Minneapolis. Well, dear lady, not only can we play your song we just did, and we'd like to welcome you and, in fact, dedicate our show tonight, our last show before Christmas, to you and our entire listening audience. Thank you for the request, and Merry Christmas. This is the Political Cesspool. I'm your host, James Edwards, along with Keith Alexander, this Saturday evening, December the 19th. It is our last show before Christmas, and here's what we're going to be doing tonight. We're going to cover the news of the week. Keith and I will this first hour. Then we're going to shift our focus to the festive and the spiritual when we invite a trio of our favorite ladies to help us get into the Christmas spirit. That's coming up in the second hour. And then in the third hour, our last hour before Christmas, Pastor Brett McAtee will be back, and he's going to present to us the biblical accounting of the Christmas story. Going to share with you the Christian Christmas message tonight, Pastor Brett will. That's coming up in the third hour. But a lot to take place, a lot to cover between now and then. Keith, great to have you tonight. Merry Christmas.
Well, Merry Christmas, and Merry Christmas to my fellow Minnesotan that made that request.
Now, Keith is a Southerner through and through, going back to his Confederate ancestry, so don't let him throw you off. He was born in Minnesota because his father was temporarily up there as a worker at the time of Keith's birth, but before that, and of course since, they have always been, of course, true Southerners. You just can't help where you were planted, but
well,
of course.
Well, I don't make apologies for that. My father found good friends in the Army that when other people couldn't get him a job, they got him a job in an electrician's apprenticeship program. So he was staying up there, and he would have stayed, I think, but for the climate. When he was stringing telephone wire in 30-mile-an-hour winds at 30 below zero, he decided it was time for a warmer climate. I cannot blame him for that.
Well, you get it down here in Memphis most of the time, that's for sure, but not so much tonight. It is wintertime, and I'm loving it. Uncle Sam, another $600 stimulus. Now, we were joking about this at supper tonight before the show. I said, you know, what they need to do is just throw $5 worth of quarters out on the concrete and watch everybody fight over it as they laugh. I mean, in principle, of course, why is the government giving
$600 for a whole year of COVID? Come on.
For people who haven't worked all year, I guess I'm supposed to make it on that, plus the $1,200 they may have gotten earlier this year. But anyway, that seems to be the topic du jour up in Washington right now.
Anything except the election fraud. COVID, $600 checks, anything except what's really newsworthy.
The Democrats, of course, want to give everybody, I think, $2,000 a month retroactive to March or whatever. Give everybody $100,000 a month and everybody will be okay. The Republicans, the deficit hawks, as they're calling them, are saying we can't do that because of the deficit. Now, I think somebody crunched the numbers. The United States gives so much money in foreign aid that every Israeli family receives like $13,000 a minute or something crazy like that. It's not quite that bad. I think it's $13,000 a month for every Israeli family if you factor it. Now, of course, the Israeli families aren't getting it.
I've heard that under the Biden administration, China is going to be directing our foreign policy rather than Israel. Well, let me tell you, they couldn't be nearly as expensive a date as the Israelis are.
Well, I'll tell you this, too. It is true that you could give money to people who are hurting. You could reinvest that in your own population and your own citizenry if it weren't for the fact of all this foreign aid, the billions of dollars that are just given away, wasted to countries who hate us, countries who are working, in fact, to subvert us.
And who wants us to do that? Again, it's our good old friends, the Sons of Israel.
Well, in any event, trillions of dollars to bail out multinational corporations and banks and you name it, but nothing for the people. That's your government at work. Of course, they are also talking about this vaccine. Hey, take that at your own peril, ladies and gentlemen. I guess we'll know if the vaccine is working if the survival rate goes from 99.7% to 99.8%. Perhaps then we'll know the vaccine's working.
We'll just compare the survival rate for the COVID illness versus the COVID inoculation.
Well, so that's also going on. We're talking about the year in review show next week. You know, another thing we do at the beginning, the first show of every calendar year, is we have a year preview show, and we do that every year with a collection of guests. We normally have 6 to 8 of our regularly featured guests on one segment of piece to give us the predictions for the year to come. I can tell you with every degree of certainty, I don't even have to go back to listen to the first show that we broadcast in January of 2020, January of this year. I can tell you that there was nobody on that show that said, here are my predictions for this year. You're going to have a global hoax pandemic. You're going to have Black Lives Matter terrorizing and burning down cities for months on end, sacking police stations. And not only will they not be arrested, they'll be coddled to the tune of $10 billion.
$10 billion
that have gone in to their coffers. And then you will have this senile old man pretending that he won the rigged presidential election. Nobody made those predictions. Now, Sam Bushman did predict we would have riots, and that was certainly prophetic, but I don't think anybody could have seen riots and occupations like we saw in Seattle and Portland and just Antifa running amok and no arrests. And if they were arrested, they were bailed out instantly.
You know, I think
nobody predicted that.
Well, I predicted election fraud in the upcoming presidential election, but I didn't imagine it would be nearly as bad as it has been.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that, too. In fact, we were originally going to have Sam Bushman on this evening. Sam, if you thought the Supreme Court was the final word when they refused, and we now hear reports of John Roberts berating all of the other justices to make sure they didn't take up the Texas case that we covered last week and that you know about, but that is not necessarily the final word. There are still 2 or 3 cards left in Trump's pocket. We're going to give you just a preview, just a very quick preview of what those cards are. And then next week, in our last show of the year, our year-in-review show, Sam Bushman is going to break them down in great detail. And perhaps by then we'll even have a little more clarity, one more week for all of this stuff to marinate and develop. Well, it's our last show before Christmas, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned. We think we've got a thoughtful presentation coming your way tonight. We'll be delivering it to you right after this.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen, when the snow lay round about, deep and crisp and even. Brightly shone the moon at night, though the frost was cruel. When a poor man came in sight, gathering winter fuel. Hither, page, and stand by me, if thou know'st it telling. Yonder peasant, who is he? Where and what his dwelling?
Sire, he lives a goodly kens underneath a mountain, right against the forest fence by St. Agnes Fountain.
Such a beautiful song, one of my all-time favorite Christmas songs. What an English feel that song has, and it really strikes to the heart of Christian charity and what Christian charity used to be, which was man doing for his fellow man, by his kith and his kin. Now, of course, Christian charity is
giving to a left-wing NGO, which is what it's
doing
it
for everyone else but your own family, and letting the Christian church in the Western nations completely rot while you scrabble together and try to build missions abroad.
Christian churches are not even Christian anymore, many of them, unfortunately. That's a much different world that Norm, not Norm Crosby, but Bing Crosby was singing about in that song.
And, of course, back at the time, you know, that this song was, you know, depicting, of course, it was a totally different Europe and a totally different Christian world. But anyway, it is Christmas time, our last show before Christmas, and that is a song that we'll continue to listen. That song really tells a beautiful story, and we'll continue that in the next segment. But Trump's still got a couple of cards that he can play. Let me tell you what's developing. We're just going to give you a quick snapshot of these things, and then next week Sam Bushman's really going to give you all of the details one by one. So legally speaking, of course, the criminally corrupt courts are shutting him out, but Sidney Powell is working on a RICO case. As a matter of fact, Sam Bushman interviewed on his program just this week one of Trump's attorneys, and by that I mean not Powell or Lynn Wood, but actually an attorney that talks on the phone to the president. And that was a very interesting interview. You'll want to check that out. And Sam will break down what legal options still remain. I was on Sam Bushman's show myself prior to the interview he had with this attorney, and I told him a quote that my pastor had once said, somebody had asked, had made the comment to my pastor at one time, we've given our country away. And my pastor said, I didn't give anything away. They took it from me kicking and screaming. And to that end, I do think Trump should make this as difficult and as unpleasant and as hard as possible. But that, of course, legally speaking, he's running the dead end after dead end. But there are other things cooking as well. Keep in mind, he does have this executive order that he can implement if he detects any sort of foreign or domestic interference that may have taken place in the election. That opens the door to many possible scenarios there, too. Again, just the broad strokes tonight. Sam Bushman is going to break down what that executive order entails and how it can be applied and what can happen if and when he signs off on it. We'll talk more about that next week. But the thing that has caught my interest the most in terms of what could still happen with regards to this election dispute, now that, of course, the Electoral College has met and sent in their votes, and as we've heard about this week, Mo Brooks, the congressman from the state of Alabama, is quite right when he says if you have evidence of election fraud and the courts don't give you a proper remedy, Congress has the last word. Congress has the last word. Congress can overturn the election results. Did you know that? They can. It's going to be difficult because the Democrats control the House. It may be impossible because you're going to have Republican turncoats too. But in order for it to get a hearing on the congressional floor, you have to have a member of the House and a member of the Senate sign off on this. And it looks like Alabama may be riding to the aid of their countrymen, Mo Brooks, the congressman, and soon-to-be seated Senator-elect Tommy Tuberville, who was not our favorite in that particular race, but he has indicated that he will sign on to this on the Senate side. Rand Paul and Ted Cruz have intimated they might as well. Rand Paul, senator from Kentucky, of course, saying that in no uncertain terms, there was fraud, and it changed the election. Now, this is a senator. This is unprecedented, really, Keith. I mean, I know you'd say, well, it's a lot of bluster, and after more is said and done, more will be said than done. And if Trump's history passes prologue, he's got a big bark but not so much bite. And if he does something radical, it'd really be the first time. Normally, it's just a lot of bluster. But you have senators. You have members of the House coming and saying there is fraud in this election, and we're going to flesh this out one way or another. Mo Brooks said the courts don't have the final say. Congress does, and we're going to see this come to a head. If that happens, it'll happen in a few days.
Well, Donald Trump often is behind the curve of his supporters. I think he's been listening to his supporters, listening to some of his important advisors, people in Congress, Republicans that are big Trumpers as opposed to the never-Trumpers that seem to outnumber them in the Republican Party. And I think he's come around to the idea that basically he has the obligation to do this, because if he doesn't do that, no election we'll have subsequent to this one will be anything other than a rubber stamping, just indicative of what used to happen in the Soviet Union or in, let's say, Venezuela or whatnot, where we're always going to have rigged elections after this if we let them get away with it. I think he understands that. Like you said, he's got the executive order basically aimed at foreign interference, but it also says foreign and domestic, so he could use that. On the other hand, he's got the Insurrection Act, which, not being an executive order, being a law passed by Congress, I think would have more credibility for him if he did that. And that would also cause the whole matter to be taken out of the venue of the civilian courts into the military courts. That would be a big advantage, hopefully, for him too, but nobody really knows what the military courts would do because they haven't been asked to weigh in on this. Then you have, like you said, Congress can overturn the electors and select the president themselves, take it out of the hands of the electors, liable not to happen. But the one that intrigues me the most is if Trump lets us down totally, doesn't get any of these done, or if the courts let us down, or if the Congress lets us down, we still have a way out, and that is Texas secession. Texas is the one state in the union that has a provision in its legal entrance into the United States that they could secede at any time for any purpose without getting permission from anybody. And they can do it by themselves. They can do it by a plebiscite of their people. They could do it by the legislature, the state legislature of Texas doing it, or the governor acting. So, well, see, all of these things are possibilities. And quite frankly, secession, I think, is really the best one out of the bunch for us. It's a, you know, Jerry Taylor wrote an article about separation is the only answer, I think, late this week, about what we do about the domination from the left that people in flyover country are groaning under, just like people in the South were groaning under tyrannical rule by New England back in the time right before the Civil War. We just got tired of having our cow melt through the fence. That's still what's happening today. And I don't see any permanent solution to this short of secession.
Well, now, again, we were talking about this tonight, too. If there is a future secession that's going to benefit us, it's not going to be waged by the likes of Alan West, who is the chairman of the Texas Republican Party. He was the one who made mention of the fact that perhaps these states should leave. And our good friend Gerald in Texas said, in fact, what you're referring to with regards to Texas's option here is not so much to secede, but to dissolve itself into five smaller parts, is what Gerald said.
They can do that, too. That's something else that they can do. They can either become five separate states if they wanted to. Of course, that would probably incur even more opposition than Texas secession.
Then you'd have 10 Republican senators out of the five dissolved
states. Rather than having Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. become states and add four new senators for the Democrats, you'd have Texas divide into five states and give 10 more senators to the Republicans.
Or at least six or eight, yeah. Well, anyway, hey, stay tuned, folks. More to come. More to come as we cover the news of the week. Then we're going to shift into the festive and the spiritual. We got some ladies coming up to help get us into this Christmas spirit, even more than we already are. In the second hour, third hour, Pastor Brett McAtee going to share with you the story of the birth of Jesus Christ.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition and lift off.
And with that, a spy satellite is on its way into orbit after a successful SpaceX launch of a Falcon 9 rocket this morning from the Kennedy Space Center. If you're out driving around shopping, you're not alone. A new survey from the National Retail Federation shows more than 150 million people in the United States plan on shopping today, known as Super Saturday, which is the last Saturday before Christmas. USA Radio News caught up with this youngster at the mall who explains why he's out shopping on one of the busiest days of the year.
Because I put everything off to the final minute. The malls were very busy, very packed.
If you haven't started your shopping, no worries, as Christmas is 6 days away. USA Radio News.
Awesome and amazing day. Men, John Jubilee with Energize Health, and I want to just talk to you man-to-man for a moment. One-third of men 50 and over suffer with high blood pressure. That high blood pressure medication has a horrible side effect, worse than death, erectile dysfunction. And it's brutal, but let's just talk about it medically. We have had thousands of people completely reverse diabetes, high blood pressure, irritable bowel syndrome, yes, and ED, raise their testosterone 500 points naturally through the breakthrough science of intercellular hydration. Men, if you're intelligent, you're skeptical. I want you to be skeptical. But go log on to our website, energizehealth.com. Click that red button, watch a masterclass, and then watch thousands of men just like you who reversed every single issue that I just mentioned. I don't make a claim. My clients make a claim. EnergizeHealth.com.
Congressional leaders are hoping to vote Sunday on a budget bill to fund the federal government and avoid a shutdown. President Trump signed a temporary spending bill, giving Congress another 2 days to pass a full funding bill. Senator Steve Daines believes something will get done in time. The Montana Republican tells Fox News that it's hard to believe that Congress is still working on this issue more than 3 months after the beginning of the fiscal year.
Mitch McConnell was very clear, nobody's going home for the holidays until we get this deal done. But you got to step back and think about how crazy things are. I mean, what we're talking about here is passing a budget that we're already 3 months into the current fiscal year. Last time I checked, The federal fiscal year ends on September 30th. It's not like a surprise to anybody. Every year, September 30th occurs on the same day. Here we are three months into the fiscal. It's truly insane in many ways, Neil. You know, people have described D.C. as a work-free drug zone. I think this confirms it.
This is USA Radio News.
And bring me flesh and bring me wine, bring me pine logs hither. Thou and I will see him dine when we bear them thither. Page and monarch, forth they went together. Through the rude wind's wild lament and the bitter weather.
Sire, the night is darker now, and the winds blow stronger. Failed my heart, I know not how, I can go no longer.
Mark my footsteps, my good page, tread thou in them boldly. Thou shalt find the winter's rage, freeze thy blood less coldly.
Again, one of the most beautiful Christmas messages you can find, that song about the monarch and his young page going through a bitterly cold winter's night to take wood and food to one of the king's poor subjects out on the outskirts of the kingdom. Really strikes to the heart of what the spirit of Christmas is all about, what Christian men are all about, what they used to be about, what they can be about again, what people like Pastor Brett McAtee are like still. And we can't wait to get to his message in the third hour. Well, one more thing very quickly, Keith. That is, we have made mention of some options still existing for Trump. Now, let me be very clear. The most likely scenario to play out is that Joe Biden will occupy the White House beginning on or about January 21st. And Trump will continue to claim he was cheated out of the election, which he probably was. I want to be clear about that, too, from Mar-a-Lago by the end of January. However, we are in some rare air, some uncharted waters with you. You've got members of the House, members of the Senate, the president still refusing to concede and go on and on. And we'll see how this plays out. Ed up in Canada, thank you, Ed, for sending this article from Dr. Jerome Corsi, who has appeared on this show. Dr. Corsi actually cited some of the political cesspools interviews in his best-selling book, Where's the Birth Certificate, some years ago, Jerome Corsi. Trump is shutting down the Biden transition. Yes, we've heard reports about the Pentagon now refusing to work with Biden any further and in some capacity as he seeks to transition into what he claims is his rightful place as the president. And then there is the recently pardoned Michael Flynn. General Flynn was doing an interview this week saying that Trump could order, quote unquote, military capabilities to swing states and, quote, rerun an election in each of those states. General Flynn went on to say people out there talk about martial law like it's something we've never done, but martial law has been instituted 64 times in American history. So that would be, I guess, of course, the nuclear option. But there are still options. There are still a very established figures that are saying that there is still work to be done and things for Trump to do and that he should do and that he might do and that he will do. We'll see. And again, we'll talk about this in much greater detail. We're about to shove off of this for the rest of the night. But Sam Bushman will break down all of this next week and we'll spend a full hour on it.
Well, we have several options that involve initiatives that can be taken by Trump. We have options that involve him in the military. We have options that involve him in the Congress. We have options that involve him alone. But the one other, if let's say Trump totally caves in on this thing, which I don't think he'll do, but let's say that he does, then we have the Texas options, the five states out of one or outright secession. That secession could lead other states, like the other 17 states that joined Texas in their motion to the Supreme Court that was proven unsuccessful last Friday, not this past Friday, but the Friday week. Those people could join, those states could join Texas, and then how would you handle it after that? Remember what happened in the Civil War. You had Abraham Lincoln ask the other states to raise, I think it was 75,000 men per state to put down the rebellion. And because of that, you had four more states join the seven that had already seceded. On the other hand, in this case, I think basically just a widespread civil disobedience by the states that pulled away. We could say, you know, just like San Francisco said they're a sanctuary city, we're all sanctuary states, and we're not going to recognize the authority of the federal government, just like San Francisco did not recognize the authority of the federal government regarding immigration issues.
That's also the most unlikely and far-fetched scenario that is out there. You had men of action in 1861. You don't have that in any governmental office in this day and age, so that's probably not going to happen. It's almost certainly that's not going to happen.
Well,
although
the problem that happened in 1860 was not so much men of action versus men of inaction. What happened, in my opinion, is that you had too many people running for president. You know, people forget that Lincoln only got 39% of the vote. If it hadn't been split four ways rather than two ways, if they could have gotten behind one of those candidates, they probably could have forestalled all of this. Of course, the one that they probably would have gotten behind was Stephen Douglas, who was better than Lincoln, but not strong enough for the secessionist people. It was Breckinridge and Bell who took the necessary votes away that kept the Southern faction from winning in 1860. But, you know, we don't have that. We don't have four people vying for the presidency in this election. We just have two, but we've never had massive voter fraud like this in any federal presidential election before.
Trump is absolutely refusing to concede. He is saying still to this very night, the GOP has to fight. This election was stolen. I am the rightful winner. We'll see. I mean, Bush is going to have to. We say this every week, but every week we say it, we're 1 week closer to the inevitable showdown that's going to have to happen on January the 20th.
And if he does it, let me just say this. He's going to have to take over the network news, because network news will just bring on the hellhounds.
Well, anyway, he has also said, according to one report, that he has told aides he is not going to vacate. Now, again, that's one report. Who knows if that's true? That's what we read. That was, I believe, a Yahoo via CNN report, though, so it's coming from the establishment mouths.
You know, the establishment is saying as little as possible about this whole election fraud matter. They want to talk about COVID. They want to talk about Christmas. Talk about weather, everything except the biggest news story there is. They are controlling it that way because they know if they start talking about it, they'll start people in the public talking more about it.
Well, we had I received a text message from Keith Alexander this week saying, do you want to talk about the article about your book on Amarin this week? And I said, well, what article is that? Keith actually saw it and found it before I did. But indeed, there was a 10-year anniversary article written on my book by Remy Tremblay. Remy is the editor of the French-Canadian journal that I did an interview with back in March. Remy interviewed me for a Southern History article that his magazine was publishing, and we did that back in the spring, and that's when I first became acquainted with Remy, and we've stayed in touch throughout the year. He had asked me a few weeks ago if he could have a copy of my book, and I didn't think anything of it, so I sent it up a copy up there to him with my compliments, and then, we saw the fruits of that particular labor.
And cast bread on the water, and it comes back as toast.
It was published by American Renaissance this week. It was a 10-year anniversary article, and Remy really did us a great honor in that. Racism, Schmacism, 10 years later. I believe the title that Amarin had was written in 2010 and unfortunately still up to date. Keith, you read it. What was it about?
Well, it's about
a quick preview because we're about to go to break. But
okay, well, a quick preview is this. Remy understands that basically this whole Great Replacement is about race and what they're using against the historic American nation is the charge of race. The charge of racism has changed because the definition of racism, like love, is a many splendid thing. It changes and gets more and more virulent and more anti-white with every passing week. And as he says in this article, in 2010, when this book was written, all white conservatives in America were presumed to be racist. Now, with Black Lives Matter, all white people, period, are deemed to be racist. And that is going to make it very easy for the anti-white revolution to proceed, because now they don't have to distinguish between good whites and bad whites. If you are white, you are bad, and you're deserving of very strict and stringent punishments, up to and including death. This is what they're trying. The Democrats have transformed their party. Back in the 60s, it was the party of civil rights and labor unions for white people and all of that, as well as black people. Now, it's the coalition of the others, everybody except white people. You have a few white people that think that they can walk the tightrope and have a dispensation for themselves while putting down white people generally. But they're going to be in for a big surprise when the big replacement comes, James. And that's what Remy recognizes and hits upon in his article.
Well, we will dig a little bit deeper to that in the coming segment. You can read it at American Renaissance Tonight, AMRAN.com. Featured piece on Wednesday, December the 16th is when it was published. I want to thank Remy again for that. We'll talk a little bit more about it. And then coming up, still the best to come tonight, second hour with the ladies, third hour with Pastor Brett. We are getting into the Christmas spirit. We'll be right back.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government, and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text F-I-G-H-T to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. defendapatriot.com.
Dad, can you make him stop?
Honey, he needs to practice.
He's been at it an hour.
Well, just trying to be patient.
Dad, it sounds like a cat calling for help or something.
Worse, a basement full of cats.
Yeah.
You know, hon, it is a little hard on the ears.
Not you, too.
Well, maybe we can all play a game. Andrew, do you want to play a board game? How about we watch a video? Hide and seek? Oh, I don't know. I give up.
Maybe we could all just sneak out of the house.
Honey, he's 9 years old. We can't leave him home alone.
And
we can make him practice with a sock.
Well, I guess we'll have to get some ice cream.
Did I hear someone say ice cream?
Family, isn't it about time?
Oh, I see the practice hasn't hurt your ears.
Well, I'm a serious musician.
Funny that you never seem to get better on that thing.
Works every time.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Hey, where'd all these cats come from?
Mary, did you know that your baby boy would one day walk on water? Mary, did you know that your baby boy would save our sons and daughters? Did you know that your baby boy has come to make you new? This child that you delivered will soon you know that your baby boy has walked where angels trod? When you kiss your little baby, you kiss the face of God. Oh, Mary, did you know?
There's a lot that's fun about Christmas, a lot that we enjoy about Christmas, but when you get right down to it, that last minute that you just heard on the radio is what Christmas is all about. And we are thankful for you, ladies and gentlemen, at Christmas time. And always, our listening family is, well, our listening audience is part of the family that God gave us, and we're so proud of you. Our studio tonight is absolutely festooned in red and green and with Christmas cards we've received from listeners all across the country, really around the world, emails we've received. Hello, James and the gang. Please accept my recent donation and please continue to press forward with your excellent radio show in the years to come. The courage and dedication shown by you and Keith over the years has been exemplary and, quite frankly, puts most of us who are aware of the plight of our people and have accomplished much less to shame. Stand fast, my friends, and a very Merry Christmas. That comes from Justin in Washington State. Justin, thank you so much for the kind words and for your support. You're entirely too kind. We do the best we can with the ability that God gave us. Hi, James and Keith. Just want to wish y'all a Merry Christmas. Here's my donation to help keep you on the air. I've listened to every episode since 2016. Thank you for the great work you do for our people. My wife and I were born and raised in Memphis but are considering moving. We're trying to have kids and want a less diverse area to raise them in. Before we move, I would love the chance to meet with you and Keith. Please keep up the great work. Well, my friend, I'm going to email you, and we're going to get together. I promise you that. Keith,
consider it done.
We're going to make that happen, that's for sure. Well, we were
One thing I wanted to say, too, James, you have a special slant on Christmas this year, you know, about the baby Jesus. You have your own baby here during the Christmas season, and I know that that must resonate with you, the fact that you have a baby and the hope. And
oh, it resonates with me tonight all too well. I could barely keep my eyes open as we were talking about earlier.
We're trying to be flowery and nice, but yeah, you're getting down to the nitty-gritty, as we
said. No, well, obviously, listen, it doesn't get any more real than that. I mean, that's what this is all about, and as we so often
every
say.
Every time that you feel aggravated by it, you just look at that little angel.
It is worth it 1,000 times over. It's worth it. I am tired. It is a lot of sleepless nights, but, this is what we are here to do. I mean, this is the very meaning of life, is to have children and raise them.
That's one thing we can all do. We can all get married, have children, go forth, be fruitful, and multiply, as God told Noah. And Noah passes that on to each and every one of us.
We try to set an example here with our work on the air for people to hopefully want to emulate in the political realm. And we, of course, try to live our lives behind the scenes at our homes in a way that complements our public work. And this is, as we so often say, with regard to the child-raising years, I turned 40 years old myself earlier this summer, just had our third child. The days are long, but the years are short, and that's for sure. And the years do go by fast, and we're thankful for another year with you, ladies and gentlemen. As crazy and as tumultuous and as hectic as 2020 was, it was made better knowing that we are together and that we have one another. And you have us and we have you. And we're talking about this 10-year anniversary book review that was written by the Frenchman Remy Tremblay up in Canada. He's a French-Canadian. And it was published by American Renaissance this week, talking about my book that was written 10 years ago, that it still is even read. Much less reviewed a decade later. It's certainly a high honor. But and people
really
are still reading
it.
Listen to this. Just wanted to let you know, this is another just very quick piece of feedback that came in as a response to that review, Keith. Just wanted to let you know that I have a copy of your book, James. I've had it since you first published it. It occupies a prominent place on my bookshelf, nestled in my collection of books on Southern culture and heritage, along with books on Southern politics. Great book. Thanks for writing it. Well, thank you for reading it. I promise you, you've done more for me than I've done for you, Keith.
Well, you know, it really is a gift that keeps on giving, because racism, if there is one key concept that is being used to marginalize and eventually exterminate the white race, it is the concept of racism. And racism, as Remy has noted, has done nothing except grow and metastasize like a cancer since you wrote this book. And the problem is, Ann Coulter said we need to, as white nationalists or as white advocates, embrace being called names rather than run from it. Unfortunately, mainstream conservatives still play the old game. Here's something from that article. It says, mainstream conservatives fail to understand this double standard and continue to play the game to rules set by their opponents. Conservatives throw around the R word themselves. That is why Mr. Edwards finds the Democrats more respectable in certain ways. Well, this is the problem. They have,
and by that he was referring to that I have noticed, as so many have, the Democrats will reward their base for voting for them. The Republicans take advantage of their base, never reward them, never really give them anything.
Well, here's what's happened. The Democrats have severely punished their white supporters. Their white supporters are now wandering in the wilderness. If there is some white union member out there somewhere that still thinks
These are masochist white supporters, meaning that they enjoy being abused. They enjoy being taken advantage of. That makes them feel good. They obviously aren't voting for the Democrats because they hope that they will do anything for them as whites.
Well, look, there are people that are still living about 50 years in the past that think that somehow as a union member they need to be a Democrat, just like in Arkansas, which was very backward among southern states. They were electing Democrats to Congress and the Senate all the way into the 90s, basically. That was unusual. That was crazy. But, you know, Mississippi, I remember my father when I was a child in the 60s telling me he hadn't left the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left him. But their newly defined coalition of the others, you're right, they do reward them and they punish their enemies, supposedly. We've been elected to be their enemies as whites, but the Republicans that are known as the White Party never rewards us. Look at Trump, for example. He had a platinum plan for Black America. He had some million-dollar plan for the Hispanics, but not a thing, not a crumb from the table for whites, whites from flyover country in particular. This is what has got to stop, and this is why. See, things are coming into focus, and that's what Remy is pointing out about this article, you know, that they're really going after the whites now, and there's anybody who tries to tell you, a white conservative, that you're a racist, you need to tell him you're a fool because you don't understand that you are a racist too, and you will be hauled to the scaffold just like I will be and others will be if you don't wake up and smell the coffee.
The thing that I enjoyed the most about Remy's review was this particular passage. At least one person got the message from Mr. Edwards' book, Donald Trump. Even if he wasn't clearly pro-white, he did not openly betray his white supporters, which is why he has been under constant attack since 2016. And he refused to bow down when liberals threw the R-word at him. This refusal to cower is what Mr. Edwards was recommending 10 years ago. And in 2016, Mr. Trump won the election because of it. It took guts to refuse the guilt game in politics. We have yet to see anyone in the mainstream media or at even the university level show the same courage. As Mr. Edwards points out, the problem is that whites are scared to death of being perceived as racist or getting called one because racist has been the most powerful racial slur in America. Mr. Edwards argues us to stop playing that game, stop apologizing, and stop trying to prove we are not racist. We can free ourselves only by refusing to bow down. He is right. That was the key to Trump's victory in 2016. We'd hoped more would come from it than did.
Well,
but
well,
it,
Trump
it did help him get elected.
Trump was not as self-aware as Remy is, but the situation is this. If you don't understand, if you're a white person now and think that you can claim to be a quote-unquote good white and not a racist, then you don't understand what's going on. You're about 10 years behind the time. What is happening now to white people is that they are shown that they are the enemy. And if you think that somehow you can be a good white and try to turn the clock back to 1960 and use the term racism the way it was understood then, you know, you need to get off the weeds. You need to get off the pipe and start, you know, clearing your mind and understanding what's going on now. you are white, you are bad in the eyes of the Democrats and the left. And the sooner you realize that, unless you're a masochist, you know, you've got two choices. You can either commit suicide or you can start defending your own race. Because that's, there's, you know, you'll be like one of these people at a Stalinist show trial back in the 30s protesting your innocence, saying that you're a good communist as they haul you out to this firing squad.
You know, I was just thinking about, again, this article, 10-year review. The book came out 2 months after my first child was born, Isabel. The 10-year review came out 2 months after my third child, Caroline, was born. We had Henry in the middle. So
there's a bookend right
there. That's right. Hey, thank you, Remy, for the review. Thank you, Jared, for publishing it. We reposted it at thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Right here on
we'll
the
be back.
News Radio Network.
We're going to go into full Christmas mode in the second hour. Stay tuned.